This is Audible.
Recorded Books Incorporated presents an unabridged recording of The Face on the Milk Carton by Caroline B. Cooney, narrated by Alisa Bresnahan.
Chapter 1. Janie finished her essay. She never knew what grade she would get in Mr. Brilo's English class. Whenever she joked, he wanted the essay serious. Whenever she was serious, he had intended the essay to be lighthearted. It was October. Outdoors throbbed with autumn. She could feel the pulse of the deep blue skies. With every leaf wrenched off its twig and whirled by the wind, Janie felt a tug. She felt like driving for hours, taking any road at all, just going. Actually, Janie was only 15 and had barely started driving lessons. She was having driving fantasies because of dinner last night. Her parents, as always, had taken opposite sides. Setting themselves up like a debate team, her mother and father would argue until some invisible marital timer rang. Then they would come to terms, rushing to meet in the middle. Until last night, her mother had said Janie could begin driving, while her father said she couldn't.
"She's just a baby,"
said her father, in the infuriating, affectionate way of fathers. "She's old," said Janie's mother lightly, "practically a woman, a sophomore in high school."
"I hate when that happens,"
her father grumbled.
"I like my little girl to stay little. I'm against all this growing up."
He wound some of Janie's hair around his wrist. Janie had fabulous hair, a wild, chaotic mane of red curls glinting gold. People always commented on it. As her best friend, Sarah Charlotte, said, "Janie, that is serious hair."
"I guess you've grown up anyway, Janie," said her father reluctantly. "Even with all the bricks I put on your head to keep you little." "Okay, I give in. You can drive."
In English, Janie smiled to herself. Her father was an accountant who in the fall had time to coach the middle school soccer teams. Today, after school, he'd have a practice or a game, but when he came home, they'd go driving. She wrote her name on her essay. She had gradually changed her name. Jane was too dull. Last year, she'd added a Y, becoming Jane, which had more personality and was sexier. To her last name, Johnson, she'd added a T, and later an E at the end. So now she was Jane Johnston. Her best friends, Sarah Charlotte Sherwood and Adair Odell, had wonderful, tongue-twisting, memorable names. Why, with the last name Johnson, hardly a name at all, more like a page out of the phone book, had her parents chosen Jane? They could have named her Scarlet or Allegra, perhaps Roxanne. Now she took the H out of Johnston and added a second Y to Jane. Jane Johnstone. It looked like the name you would have if you designed sequined gowns for a living or pointed to prizes on television quiz shows.
"Earth to Janie," said Mr. Brilo.
She blushed, wondering how many times he had called her. "The rest of us are reading our essays aloud, Janie," said Mr. Brilo. "We'd like to issue an invitation for you to join us." She blushed so hotly she had to put her hands over her cheeks.
"Don't do that," said Pete. "You're cute when your face matches your hair."
Immediately, the back row of boys went into barbershop singing, hands on hearts, invisible straw hats flung into the air. "Once in love with Janie," they sang. Janie had never had a boyfriend. She was always asked to dances, was always with a crowd, but no boy had actually said, "I want to be with you and you alone." Mr. Brilo told Janie to read her essay aloud. The blush faded. She felt white and sick. She hated standing up in class,
hated hearing her voice all alone in the quiet of the room. The bell rang. English was a split period. They had lunch in the middle and came back for more class. Never had lunch come at such an appropriate moment. Perhaps she would write a better essay during the 27 minutes of lunch. Certainly it wasn't going to take Janie long to eat. They had recently discovered she had a lactose intolerance. This was a splashy way of saying she had stomach aches when she drank milk. No more ice cream, no more milk, was the medical parental decree. However, peanut butter sandwiches, which she had in her bag lunch, required milk. "I'm so sick of fruit juice," Janie thought. "I want milk." She had been eating since the school year began, with Pete, Adair, Sarah Charlotte, Jason, and Katrina. She loved all their names. Her last year's daydream, before a driver's license absorbed all daydream time, had been about her own future family. She couldn't picture her husband-to-be, but she could see her children perfectly. Two beautiful little girls, and she would name them Denim and Lace. She used to think about Denim and Lace all the time. Shopping at the mall with Sarah Charlotte, she'd go into all the shoe stores to play with the little teeny sneakers for newborns and think of all the pretty clothes she'd buy one day for Denim and Lace. Now, she knew those names were nauseating, and if she did name her daughters Denim and Lace, there'd probably be a divorce, and her husband would get custody on the grounds anybody who chose those names was unfit. She'd have to name them something sensible, like Emily and Margaret. Peter, Adair, Sarah Charlotte, Jason, Katrina, and Janie went in a mob down the wide stairs, through the wide halls, and into the far too small cafeteria. The kids complained about the architecture of the school, all that space dedicated to passing periods and hardly any to lunch. But they loved being crammed in, filching each other's potato chips, telling secrets they wanted everybody to overhear, passing notes to be snatched up by the boy you hoped would snatch them, and sending the people on the outside of the crush to get you a second milk. Everybody but Janie Johnson got milk. Cardboard cartons so small you needed at least three, but the lunch ladies would never let you. Janie was envious. "Those luckies are swigging down nice, thick, white milk," she thought, "and I'm stuck with cranberry juice." "Okay," said Sarah Charlotte. Sarah Charlotte wouldn't bother with you if you tried to abbreviate her name. Last year she had reached a standoff with a teacher who insisted on calling her Sarah. Sarah Charlotte glared at him, silently, for months until he began calling her Miss Sherwood, which let them both win. "Okay, who's been kidnapped this time?" said Sarah Charlotte wearily, as if jaded with the vast number of kidnappings in the world. Sarah Charlotte patted her white blonde hair, which was as neat as if she had cut it out of a magazine and pasted it onto her head. Janie, whose mass of hair was never the same 2 minutes in a row, and whose face could be difficult to find beneath the red tangles, never figured out how Sarah Charlotte kept her hair so neat. "I have approximately 500,000 fewer hairs than you do," Sarah Charlotte explained once. Everybody turned the milk cartons over to see who had been kidnapped. The local dairy put pictures of stolen children on the back of the carton. Every few weeks, there was a new child. "I don't know how you're supposed to recognize somebody who was 3 years old when she got taken from a shopping center in New Jersey, and that was nearly a dozen years ago," said Adair. "It's ridiculous." Adair was as sleek and smooth as her name. Even her dark hair matched, unruffled and gleaming like a seal out of water. Janie sipped juice from a cardboard packet and pretended it was milk. Across the cafeteria, Reeve waved. Reeve lived next door. He was a senior. Reeve never did homework.
It was his life ambition to get in the Guinness Book of World Records, and the only thing he had a stab at was the never did his homework once but still got the occasional B-plus listing. Reeve had gotten the occasional B-plus, but he had also gotten a lot of D's and F's. News came from the academic office that unless Reeve shaped up, he wouldn't graduate with his class. His two older sisters and one older brother had gone to spectacular colleges, Cornell, Princeton, and Stanford. They were mortified by Reeve's failures and came home weekends to tell him so. Reeve had ceased to speak to his entire family. In fact, he stomped away and had supper at Janie's so often that Janie's mother had said last night, "I'm thinking of charging your parents a meal fee." Reeve didn't laugh. In a strangled voice, he said, "I'm sorry. I won't come again." Janie's father punched him, the way, if it had been Janie, he would have hugged. Jabbing Reeve in the gut, her father said, "Meals here, bed there, Reeve. Someday we'll collect our debt." "Yeah, when I'm a plumber," said Reeve gloomily. "You'll let me clean your drains." "Now, Reeve, just start studying. Pull those grades up and..." Her father broke off. "Right?" he said, punching Reeve again. "In this house, we won't discuss it. Here, have a brownie and some ice cream." It was such a trespass on Reeve that everybody knew the details. Whatever Reeve kept secret, his mother told Janie's mother anyway. Reeve felt cramped by the intimacy of his life. He had always lived in this town, always gone to this school. "I want to live in a city," he'd said last night, "and be anonymous." Ruefully, Janie thought her name would give her a pretty good start if she wanted to go anonymous. Sarah Charlotte was hoping Reeve would ask Janie out. Sarah Charlotte wasn't interested in getting her driver's license. She was interested in having a steady boyfriend, who had to be tall, handsome, muscular, smart, courteous, and rich. Reeve was all but one. "And if Reeve doesn't ask you out," was Sarah Charlotte's theory, "maybe his friends will." Janie didn't think the boy next door ever came through in real life. Nor would any of Reeve's friends ask her out. Last year's seniors had dated lots of younger girls. This year's seniors seemed annoyed that they had to be in the same building. And Janie felt younger than her age. She had grown later and grown less. While Adair and Sarah Charlotte were busy becoming sophisticated and articulate, Janie remained small. Her mother said she was cute. Janie loathed that word. Cute was for toddlers and kittens. Boys didn't date cute little girls. They dated streamlined, impressive women like Sarah Charlotte and Adair. Besides, how would she date? Her parents didn't even let her go to the shopping mall alone. They'd never let her date. Alone? With a boy? Ha! Not likely. Janie waved back at Reeve, and he turned to his friends. Duty done. "If he knew I'm really Jane Johnstone," she thought, "would he do more than wave?" She felt curiously heavy, like the difference between whole milk and skim. Through the cafeteria windows the sun gleamed, filling the school with golden shafts in which dust swirled. On her left, so close he was nearly in her lap, Pete drank his milk in one long swig and crushed the carton in his hand. The boys loved doing that. If they had a soda, they stamped the can under their feet and looked proudly at the flat aluminum. "My mother says none of them are really kidnapped anyhow," said Pete. "She says it's all hype." It took Janie several seconds to realize he was talking about the face on the milk carton. "What do you mean?" she said.
She ate her peanut butter sandwich. Almost anything with peanut butter was excellent. Peanut butter and marshmallow fluff. Peanut butter and bananas. But a person needed milk to wash it down. "All it is," said Pete firmly, "is divorce. Where one parent gets mad and takes his own kid, but he doesn't tell the other parent where they're going. It's never actually a stranger stealing a kid, like on television."
"You mean they weren't really stolen?" said Sarah Charlotte, vastly disappointed. She made several dramatic gestures.
There was no room for dramatic gestures in the cafeteria, and people grabbed to save the whipped cream towers on their jello from getting splattered by Sarah Charlotte's hands.
"Nobody wants a ransom?" cried Sarah Charlotte. "Nobody is being tortured?"
"If I drink one carton of milk," Janie thought, "is my allergy so serious I'll die?"
How boring the obituary would be. "Here lies Jane Johnson."
"I should leave a note. Put Jane on my stone." Janie shook her head. Pete and Jason immediately complained that they had gotten red hair in their faces, and would Janie please get a grip on her hair?
"What do you want me to do?" demanded Janie. "Wear a net around it?"
"Either that or build an addition to the cafeteria to house it," said Peter. Everybody giggled. Janie shook her hair more vigorously. The boys ducked and threw potato chips at Janie while she reached for Sarah Charlotte's milk and drank it up. Perfect meal. Peanut butter sandwich and a glass of milk. Janie set the carton down and sighed with pleasure. The little girl on the back of the carton stared back at her. It wasn't much of a picture. After all, how good could a picture be when it was printed on a milk carton?
"You ready for that algebra test?" Jason asked Adair.
"I was ready till I ate cafeteria food. Do you think he'll let me out of the test if I have food poisoning?"
The girl on the carton was an ordinary little girl, hair in tight pigtails, one against each thin cheek, a dress with a narrow white collar. The dress was white, with tiny dark polka dots. Something evil and thick settled on Janie, blocking her throat, dimming her eyes.
"Sarah Charlotte?" she said.
She could hear herself shouting Sarah Charlotte's name, yet her lips weren't moving. She was making no sound at all. She reached toward Sarah Charlotte's sleeve, but her hand didn't obey. It lay motionless on top of the carton. It looked like somebody else's hand. She couldn't imagine herself wearing that shade of nail polish or that silly ring.
"You drank my milk," accused Sarah Charlotte.
"It's me on there," Janie whispered. Her head hurt. Was the milk allergy already setting in? Or was she going insane? Could you go insane this fast? Surely it took years to lose your mind.
She imagined people losing their minds the way you might lose a penny or your car keys, accidentally dropping your mind in the cafeteria.
"On where?" said Peter.
"The girl on the back of the carton," whispered Janie. How flat her voice sounded, as if she had ironed it. "It's me." She remembered that dress. How the collar itched. Remembered the fabric. It was summer fabric. The wind blew through it. Remembered how those braids swung like red silk against her cheeks.
"I know you're sick of school," said Sarah Charlotte. "But claiming to be kidnapped is going a little too far, Janie."
Pete retrieved his flattened milk and tried to shape it back into a carton. He read between the folds.
"You were stolen 10 years ago from a shopping center in New Jersey, Janie. What are you doing here?"
"Yeah," said Adair, giggling.
"Why aren't you off yelling for the police?"
Oh, she's just trying to get out of reading her essay, said Jason.
No, she's just trying to steal my milk, said Sarah Charlotte. The bell rang. The others hurled their garbage toward the huge plastic-lined trash cans by the door and missed. Ducking under the plump arms of the lunch ladies, they raced back to class instead of picking it up. Janie held Sarah Charlotte's empty milk carton and stared at the photograph of the little girl. I was kidnapped. Chapter 2. Janie learned that her body could function without her. She lived entirely inside her mind, searching her memory like a little kid going through an encyclopedia, trying to find the right heading. Jane Elizabeth Johnson, kidnapping of. Her body, including her voice, her smile, even her knowledge. During sixth period, she was actually able to answer questions in biology lab. Continued to work properly. How interesting, Janie thought clinically. My body doesn't need me. She had a sense of herself being brain dead, running on tubes and machines. Inside, her mind spun. It was like having a color wheel for a brain. When it slowed down, things were separate, like primary colors. I have a mother and father. I have a childhood. I wasn't kidnapped. Kidnapping means bad people. I don't know any bad people. Therefore, I am making this up. But when her mind speeded up, the colors blended dizzily. That is me on there. I, Janie Johnson. I was kidnapped. But it couldn't be. The facts didn't compute. She tried to climb outside her mind and go where her body was, sitting neatly at a desk, neatly taking notes. It was like crawling on glass. No matter how firmly she resolved not to think such stupid things, she thought them. She slithered backward into her mind. Perhaps it's insanity, Janie thought. Perhaps I'm trapped in here with this horrible idea, and I'll never get out. After a while, people will notice, and they'll lock up my body the way insanity has locked up my mind. She discovered that school had ended. Her body had gone to her locker, taken the right books, put on her jacket, remembered the gym uniform that had to be washed, said goodbye to friends and foe. But slowly, like someone trying to avoid the muddy parts in the grass, her small body seemed to thicken, as if she had real iron in her blood and weighed several tons. The bus had left before she even arrived in the lobby. All the buses had left. It was pouring rain. The golden, gaudy blue October had vanished and turned black and thundering. The sky at its richest, full of rage, ready to hit someone. It threw the rain against the pavement and ripped the leaves from the sugar maples. A car headed for her. She watched the car, realizing that it was going to run her over, that somehow, although she was on the sidewalk, the car was aimed for her. Perhaps I should move, she thought. But nothing happened to her legs. They stayed there, holding her color wheel brain in place, waiting to get run over. Get in quick, said Reeve, before you get any wetter. She had recognized neither him nor his jeep. He had pulled the jeep almost over her toes. The outside rearview mirror brushed the buttons on her jeans jacket. Janie got in slowly. This is fun, she thought. Now I'm paralyzed and blind, too. Reeve said, Let's ride down by the water, see if the tide is up over the road. Reeve loved floods. 2 years ago, there had been such a wonderful flood, the families on the beach roads had to be rescued by the National Guard. Reeve had begged his parents to buy waterfront property so they could be in place for the next flood.
They had uncooperatively said they liked it better a mile away on top of a hill. But Reeve kept an old battered canoe ready in the garage, in case there should be another opportunity to paddle down the middle of the street. "A deluge like this," said Reeve happily. "A true Noah's Ark-type rain. You should have some decent flooding." Janie nodded and turned the hot air vents in her direction to dry her clothes, her thick red hair sprawinged up like a new permanent from the wetting it had taken. "May I borrow your penknife?" she said.
"Sure."
He detached the knife from his belt loop while she steered the jeep. Then she couldn't get the blade to come up without breaking off a fingernail. Reeve stopped at a red light and opened the penknife for her. Janie took the empty milk carton out of her book bag. She'd rinsed it out in the girls' room between fifth and sixth periods. She slit the carton open. Carefully, she flattened it out. Then she opened her three-ring blue-cloth English notebook, which had a clipboard on the inner front cover, and clipped the flat carton so that the photograph didn't show. All Reeve could read was the logo, Flower Dairy, your local milk producer, serving all communities on the shoreline. "That's an interesting hobby," observed Reeve. "You don't find too many milk carton collectors." Janie thought about Pete's explanation. These so-called kidnappings are really just divorces, where one parent takes the child away and doesn't tell the other parent where they've gone. "Does that mean," she thought, "that either my mother or my father is not my mother or my father? That somewhere out there is a real mother or father who has wondered for 12 years where I am?" Reeve was staring out at the Atlantic Ocean, where the storm was hurling water and sand on the unprotected beaches. Reeve was handsomer than the rest of his family, yet there was a very strong resemblance among them. People could actually recognize Reeve by the smile that so much resembled his brother's, and the ruddy cheeks that were the trademark of his sister's. Now he was making terrible faces, flexing his forehead and lips and nose like silly putty, because high tide hadn't managed to go over the road. Reeve turned the jeep into the scenic overlook, better known among teenagers as the sexual overlook, because at night you could go there and watch couples in action. To the east stretched the ocean, and to the west, barely protected by thin spits of sand and mud, was the harbor where the wind jostled boats against the wharves. The boatyard was filled with marina employees taking boats out of the water for the winter storage. Even over the pounding of the waves and rain, Janie could hear a strange smacking sort of applause. Not rigging hardware, nor waves against docks. "What's that noise?" she said. "At least I'm not deaf," she thought. "Flags," said Reeve. "American flags, everywhere. On the docks, at the fuel pumps, on the boats. Each clapped in the fierce wind like a cloth maniac." "I'm sort of like a flag," said Reeve. "Red, white, and blue?" "No. A big banner flapping in the wind. 'You're dumb,' says the flag. My sisters, my brother, my parents, they don't say it out loud. They kind of line up my college application forms next to my grades and my SATs, and the old flag waves. 'You're dumb.'" "You're not dumb," said Janie, although he was. She adored Reeve, but brains would round him out a bit. "My parents haven't taken me to see any college campuses," said Reeve, "nor arrange any interviews, nothing. For Megan and Lizzie and Todd, we spent a year apiece visiting and pondering and drawing up lists and pros and cons. With me, they've already given up. They don't yell at me anymore. You know what my mother said to your mother?" "No," said Janie, although she did. Her mother had repeated it, of course. "Or is she my mother?" thought Janie. Is she Daddy's second wife? Did they steal me from my real mother? Or is it Daddy who is somebody else? Maybe they're not even married. Maybe they just...
Your mother said to my mother, "At least you can be proud of Megan, Lizzie, and Todd." And then my mother said, "That's true. 3 out of 4 isn't bad."
Nobody else in my family has red hair, thought Janie. I don't laugh like Mother and Daddy. My fingernails aren't shaped like theirs. "That's terrible," she said to Reeve. "They're being rotten, writing you off like that."
"I'll be lucky to get into the community college," said Reeve.
He fiddled with the radio dials and the heater knobs, flicked the emergency blinkers on and off, and pawed through the cassettes he had in the Jeep.
"At least you have a Jeep to commute in," said Janie. But this wasn't a comfort to Reeve, who wanted to be brilliant, outstanding, impressive, and memorable, like his brother and sisters.
She opened her notebook. She tilted it and peered at the back of the milk carton. It was still her on there. She hadn't allowed herself to read the name under the photograph. Now she read it. Jenny Spring. Her brain stopped being a color wheel and became an echo chamber. Jenny Spring. Jenny Spring. Jenny Spring. Jenny.
"What have you gotten there?" teased Reeve.
He reached for the notebook to see what forbidden article was stashed in it. Janie jerked it back.
"No, Reeve, don't," she said urgently. And he was startled, pulling his hand back as if maybe it were a scorpion inside the English notebook.
Reeve left the scenic overlook so fast they hydroplaned over the puddles. Then he gnashed the gears, roaring forward along the narrow, wet beach road, skidding purposely. He took each gear up to its highest RPMs so the motor screamed. He jerked left into the traffic on Route 1. Like a warrior, he battled the cars and the rain, pedal to the metal, taking off from each stop sign like a chariot racer. Janie touched her seatbelt and said nothing. She would feel that way, too, if she were Reeve. While he was passing in a no-passing zone, Janie turned the milk carton cover over again. The little girl's name and birth date. The 800 number to call if you recognized her. The place from which she vanished in New Jersey. None of it meant a thing to Janie. "I've always felt a year younger than Sarah Charlotte and Adair," thought Janie. "And if that's my birthday, I am a year younger. I'm not old enough to get my driver's license after all." But it was too ridiculous. She had a family, a perfectly normal family. They loved her. She loved them.
"I don't feel like going home yet, do you?" said Reeve.
He spoke in the voice people use when you have to agree or walk home. Besides, she did agree. She had hardly ever agreed with anything more.
"Let's get ice cream," said Reeve.
He jerked the wheel hard, turned across traffic with far too little time, and just barely missed getting a pickup truck through the side of his Jeep. The trucker rightly leaned on his horn. Janie gave him an apologetic smile and the town wave. The trucker grinned at Janie. She shook her red hair at him, and the guy grinned even wider. "Perhaps I'm fascinating after all," she thought. "That trucker forgave Reeve because I tossed my hair. He'd believe me if I said my name was Jane Johnstone." "I don't have any money," she told Reeve, "and I can't have ice cream." "But what if my name is Jenny Spring?" she thought.
"I'll pay. Anyway, I saw you drinking milk for lunch. You've already broken the rules."
He saw me drinking Sarah Charlotte's milk, she thought, which I drank long after he waved. So he looked back, checked me out a second time. They went to a booth, passing two groups of teenagers she knew by sight but not by name. All eyes landed on Reeve with Janie and drew conclusions. Janie wasn't sure she liked this. It wasn't a date. Poor Reeve was just having to admit he was dumb. Janie was his trusty, rusty, next-door neighbor. Reeve ordered two hot fudge sundaes, on one scoop each of vanilla and chocolate mint. For years, when they were little kids going shopping with their mothers, this had been Janie's order. She had changed preferences since the last time she had had ice cream with Reeve. Up till the lactose intolerance discovery, she'd ordered vanilla with butterscotch topping. She said nothing. She was quite touched that Reeve remembered. Reeve talked about first quarter grades, which were coming up in only a few weeks. He talked about the horror of failing his senior year, of having to go to a lousy college when Megan, Lizzie, and Todd went to such winners. The horror of all school at all times. The waitress brought the sundaes much more quickly than usual, and Janie thanked her. She turned to look at her sundae. The world shifted. Friendly ice cream seemed to spin around her, all its flavors, all its booths, tilting and screaming. She was sitting with somebody else, sitting on a high stool, a stool that swiveled. She was turning herself slowly and carefully by holding on to the counter. Her feet didn't touch the footrest. She was little. She was admiring her white cotton socks as she turned because they had a little strip of lace. A woman was next to her, not swiveling. Long, straight hair cascading down the woman's back. So pretty, Janie had to touch it. The woman kept her hand in the air behind Janie's back so she wouldn't tip off the spinning stool. Janie was having a sundae, whipped cream on it, eating the cherry off her sundae first and then one off the woman's sundae. They were laughing. Janie was little. The woman hugged her, swung her around as the stool had swung. There was a hot wind. They were outside now, in a huge parking lot, maybe the biggest parking lot in the world. Her dress, white with tiny dark dots, blue in the air. "Janie," said Reeve, "are you all right?" Janie's mouth was dry, her hands icy. She was shivering all over. She could feel the tiny table shaking from her shivers. Reeve was frightened. "Are you getting the flu?" he said. He put his hand out as if to stop her from crossing some terrible road. "You're not really seriously allergic to milk, are you? I mean, is your throat going to close up or your heart stop?" She was aware that he was calling her, raising his voice, that people were looking. "Janie? Janie, are you okay?" His hand took hers, and to her frozen fingers his hand felt like a furnace, as if he were going to scorch her. "I'm fine," she said. "Dizzy." She had always had control over her daydreams, like the daydreams of denim and lace in which she designed every detail to suit herself. She had never had a daydream that dreamed itself, like nightmares, that crawled out of her brain like a creature of the dark. A daymare. Janie shuddered. "I'd better not eat the sundae," she said. Already the daymare was fading, leaving her flesh like jelly, but no pictures to remember it by. Woman, she thought dimly. Stool. Dress. Hot wind. "It must be," thought Janie, "that my life is boring. Deep down I must be as angry over the boredom as Reeve is over being dumb. He drives like a maniac to feel better and I fall into maniac daydreams. My parents are my parents. Nobody kidnapped me. I don't really remember the dress." Reeve called to the waitress. "Could we have these to go?" He pointed at Janie. "She doesn't feel well."
"They'll be messy," said the waitress doubtfully.
The top will be on the bottom.
Tell me about it, thought Janie.
Chapter 3. There were no cars in the driveway. Her father couldn't be coaching soccer in this weather, so he would be pulling in any moment now. Her mother must be at the hospital. What day was this? She volunteered 2 days a week. The Johnsons' driveway was separated from Reeves by a thin row of shrubs over which Megan, Lizzie, Todd, and now Reeve continually backed. Only hours ago, Janie had thought joyously of the day when she, too, learning reverse, would flatten a few bushes.
"You sure you'll be all right?" said Reeve. "I could ask Mom to go over and sit with you."
"Please," said Janie, meaning no, and they both laughed. When Reeve's mother took care of a person, she took serious care. Bed rest, chicken soup, and pillow fluffing. On school nurse forms, Janie had always put Reeve's mother to phone in an emergency, and Reeve had always put Janie's mother. Reeve's mother always sat with Janie, rubbing her back, reading chapters from long books. Janie had to be in the mood for all that loving kindness. More often, when she was sick, she just wanted to be alone, in the silence and the nest of her bed. "How can I be kidnapped?" thought Janie. "I don't even have neighbors who understand evil, let alone parents." She got out of the jeep and dashed through the rain, putting her key in the side door. This opened onto a landing on the stairs between the cellar and the kitchen. Down in the cellar, next to the gleaming white washer and dryer, her folded jeans were stacked. Up in the kitchen lay a pile of mail, an overflowing brown paper bag marked for the Salvation Army, and the breakfast dishes. She scraped the dishes and loaded the dishwasher. It wasn't full enough to run. There was a note on the refrigerator in her mother's pretty script. "Darling, don't forget class tonight. Home by supper. Love, Mommy." Janie hadn't called her mother Mommy in years, though she still called her father Daddy. "Class?" she thought, trying to make sense of that reminder. She walked through the house, touching. Same furniture. Her mother liked deep, intense colors. The sofa and chairs were a blue so dark and rich, they invited you like a deep sea to dive in. In the dining room, two walls were glass, and one was bright red. The only decoration was an enormous framed color photograph of Janie, age 12, bridesmaid for a wedding. She was giggling in the picture, half bent over, trying to hold her tiara of flowers as it slid off her red hair. Janie disliked the portrait. She hadn't gotten her braces yet, and the uneven teeth seemed to take over the entire picture. But her parents loved it. "How you adored that long dress," they would say, smiling into the photograph's eyes as if it were as alive. "How proud you were being in the wedding party, dancing with the groom, staying up till dawn." Janie climbed the stairs to her room, passing by the ascending wall of photographs. Her parents disliked albums. They immortalized Janie on the stairs. Janie at the beach, on skis, in a scout uniform, in her first dancing dress. Janie on their trip to the Grand Canyon. Janie in gymnastics. Janie at the middle school award ceremony. Janie on the runway for the fashion show the hospital sponsored as a benefit. "I'm sick," she thought. "Deranged. Imagine imagining they kidnapped me. I mean, talk about proof of loving family. From the folded laundry to the refrigerator note." She remembered what the class was. Her mother had decided that she and Janie needed an activity to share. She'd picked, of all things, cake decorating. In spite of their past record at arts and crafts, the failed needlepoint pillows, the abandoned quilt tops, the unfinished knitting. Her mother was convinced that she and Janie could be like the rest of the world and do something creative with their hands. The only thing Janie liked to do with her hands was put nail polish on them and dial phone numbers. Phone numbers. On the milk carton was a toll-free 800 number to dial, "If you have seen this child." Janie froze 3 steps from the top, turning her head slowly, like a patient becoming paralyzed, neck stiffening forever. She forced her eyes to search among the photographs. There were no baby pictures. She had asked why before. "Because they never got around to buying a camera till Janie was 5, said her parents. "But you didn't need your own camera for baby photographs. Every single store that sold baby clothes, from Sears to Bloomingdale's, from High Fashion Tot to Toys R Us, had photographers and special portrait prices. Jenny Spring, taken from a shopping center in New Jersey at age 3. "But I should remember," thought Janie. 3 years old is time to have memories. It's not as if Jenny Spring was 3 months old. She entered her room. It was the largest bedroom in the house. Since her parents each had a small study, they had taken the little bedroom and given her the spacious master bedroom. Janie had a habit of leaping into hobbies with tremendous enthusiasm for a few months and then abandoning them forever. The walls and shelves were testimony to lost interests. There was the gymnastics display, when she had fallen in love with tumbling. There were the horseback riding ribbons from 4th grade, when she practically lived at the stable. There was the music, when she had intended to be the world's foremost flutist. The last piece she had ever practiced still lay open on the pretty little music stand her parents had bought her for Christmas that year. Janie didn't share her mother's adoration of fierce, intense blues and reds. When she turned 14, they had redecorated the room by Janie's colors: ivory, pale, pale rose, and faded lavender. The bedspread Janie had chosen was lace panels, all different shades and textures of white. It was too fragile to sit on. She folded the lace into a tube at the bottom of her bed and lay down on the plain, dark rose wool blanket beneath it. She was as rigid as a board. The mattress sank down while Janie's spine remained stiff. She ordered her muscles to relax, forcing first her shoulders to go limp, then her neck and her jaw. At last she had sagged into the contours of the mattress. Now she tried to look inside her brain, to dip through her memory as if it were a card catalog at the library. Nothing. And yet, memory felt oddly bright. Not dark, not scary or mysterious. Light. Easy. Good. "There's somebody else down there," thought Janie. She shuddered violently, picturing another tiny little girl living at the bottom of her body, begging to get out. Janie wet her lips. The silence of the house was suddenly unbearable. She leaped from the bed, pounded down the stairs, flung open the side door, and ran over to the Shields' house. They were too close friends with the Shields' to bother much with knocking. She opened the door, yelled, "Hello!" and went on in. Mrs. Shields was watching Lassie. "There's probably something wrong with me," remarked Reeve's mother. "But I adore all these old black-and-white reruns. They're so safe." "Safe," thought Janie.
"Is not safe," said Reeve, coming into the room.
He had his physics lab book with him. The sight of Reeve with an academic text in his hand startled Janie. "Timmy and Lassie are always saving somebody from runaway trains or bottomless swamps or forest fires." "Ah, but the kitchen," said Mrs. Shields. "Nothing ever goes wrong in the kitchen. Have a chocolate chip cookie, dear, she said to Janie.
Don't, advised Reeve. She put icky things like oatmeal and bran into the cookies.
Timmy, he told his mother, referring to Lassie's owner, would never have had to gag down oatmeal and bran in his cookies. Nevertheless, Reeve took several of the largest cookies and flung himself into a chair. He was one of those boys who don't simply sit. They collapse, snapping the legs off chairs and breaking the backs of couches. Janie and his mother waited for Reeve to fall on through to the floor, but the chair held him once more.
Mrs. Shields, said Janie, how long have you lived here?
Darling, I am that Rara Avis, a native. I was born here.
I mean, in this house.
28 years. Bought it when we were married.
Do you remember when we moved here?
I certainly do. You were the most adorable 5-year-old who ever drew breath on Romney Road. And your mother was the strictest parent. I shaped up once she moved in, let me tell you.
Mrs. Shields smiled, a private smile of memories kept within, to warm herself by.
Why was she so strict? Said Janie.
She had bitten off some cookie and now was unable to chew it. Little bits of dough and bran lay on her tongue and threatened to choke her. Because you were so bad, said Reeve immediately. He and his mother laughed. No, Janie was always sweet, good, obedient, and courteous, said Mrs. Shields. I used to yearn for a Janie among my 4 wild animals.
Why was I such a goody-goody? Thought Janie. Was I afraid?
If they stole me, I should have been afraid of them, not the rest of the world.
Seriously, said Janie.
Mrs. Shields watched Lassie. Timmy's mother was wearing her apron. In old television, they always had on aprons.
Janie fell into another nightmare by daylight. Her mind plummeted down into the nightmare, the way Reeve's muscular body had fallen onto the upholstery. Apron. It was white, heavy, almost as heavy as canvas. It had a bib. Her mother kept little hard candies in one pocket, and Janie could stretch up and reach her baby hand into the pocket to take out one candy, with a cellophane wrapper that crinkled. But my mother doesn't wear aprons, thought Janie.
Life isn't like that now, said Mrs. Shields, sadly. Too many dreadful possibilities out there, and hardly any lassies to save you.
Mothers have nightmares about their babies, Janie, from drowning in a neighbor's swimming pool to snapping the spine playing football. I think all mothers fear that one dreadful accident, when the child dashes out in front of a truck, when some maniac snatches the child during the 1 second the mother isn't looking. Your mother has always felt that way, Janie. She's always been afraid.
For what reason? Said Janie. She forced herself to swallow the dead cookie in her mouth. Reeve, becoming a host, which was almost as unthinkable as Reeve becoming a scholar, handed her a Coke.
What mother ever needed a reason? Said Mrs. Shields.
I suppose because you were the only child. I had 3 earlier ones to take out my unreasonable fears on. Old Reeve here. I didn't worry about him much because I'd used up so much worry on the others. She and Reeve began a teasing verbal battle about how much worry he had caused her in his 17 years and was likely to cause in the next 17. Janie stayed till the end of Lassie. The final scene was in the kitchen. Timmy, of course, had a glass of milk. Nobody in old television gave their kids soda. It ended happily ever after, with hugs all around and a barking collie.
Oh, my goodness, I'm late, cried her mother, throwing open the front door.
Her mother never came in the side door. She liked to look around the front hall, with its graceful mirrors and slender, elegant furniture, and into the beautiful living room she had designed. "Janie, by any wonderful chance, did you start supper? We have our cake decorating class tonight. We've got to leave in 30 minutes. What's in the freezer? Anything we can microwave? Did you do your homework? How was school?" She gave Janie a big hug and a little row of kisses down her cheek toward her throat. "Daddy home yet?" "No." Janie stared at her mother. She tried to imagine her mother as a kidnapper, rushing into shopping malls and jerking little girls off soda fountain stools. But her mother was elegant, formal. She could imagine her mother raising funds for a scholarship for this little girl, but actually snatching her? Mother liked to conduct her meetings properly, with much consulting of formal rules of order. "Oh, dear, I hate it when we leave in the evening without seeing him. I hate not having dinner together. I read the other day that most families in America now have separate meals. Each one just grabs a bite on the run, a pizza here, a frozen Weight Watchers casserole there. I think that's so sad. Families no longer sitting down together every evening. And here we are, just like all the rest. I hate being just like all the rest." "Well, you're not," thought Janie. "You're a kidnapper." Her mother was beautifully dressed. She hung up her crimson wool coat and slipped off her high, slim heels. Her feet were very long and very narrow, and finding shoes was a real trial. Janie's feet were short and wide. "There's nothing in me that's like her," thought Janie. "Is it because I have none of her genes? Because she isn't my mother?" She forced herself to think of Adair Odell, who was so sleek. Adair's mother was a fat, messy woman whose offspring you would expect to be total rugrats. So lots of times kids didn't resemble their parents. It meant nothing. Her father charged in the side door, full of energy from soccer. "What a team!" he said. He launched his first bear hug at his wife, and Janie would normally have run up for hers, but she found herself edging out of reach. "What a season! I love my kids. They try so hard. We practiced in the school gym because of the rain. Can't stand that stupid principal they have down there. Good janitor, though. Big help. I can't wait for the next game. We have so much potential this year. Why are we having microwave pizza? Where are you guys going? Don't I even get to talk to my girl?" He pretended to kick soccer balls around Janie's ankles. "Daddy, stop it," she said. "How can I embarrass you when there's nobody around to see?" he countered. "Tell you what, I promise to do this in front of all your friends one day, just for comparison's sake." "Thanks," said Janie. "Cake decorating," explained her mother. "Do you think it's the right sort of class for somebody as weight-obsessed as you are?" said her father. "I won't eat any of it," said her mother virtuously. "Sure," said her father. "Listen, you two scarf down those awful frozen jobs. I'll make myself a real dinner after my shower. Love ya. Have fun. Bring me some cake. I want the most frosting." He charged up the stairs. "They talk more than I do, too," thought Janie. "They spout conversation continually, both of them. I have more listening in me than talking." The class was at the Y. The familiar hot chlorine and sweat smell of the pool met their noses. "Remember your swim team?" said her mother. "I was so glad you lost interest in swimming. There I'd sit with all the other mothers waiting for hours till your heat came up, and then I couldn't even tell which one you were, and it was over in 3 minutes anyhow. Ugh! At least when you took up riding, it was more fun. Why don't you go back to riding?" "I would have if I'd known the alternative was cake decorating," said Janie. "Mom, I'm dreading this. We've bombed out on watercolor, decoupage.